read Irish. It's actually a different alphabet from English. It just looks here. Let's see. All right. That's better.
Yeah, this is the Review New Podcast.
Wait. Do the Monomana.
We do the Monomana.
Do the Monomana.
We do the Monomana. It's the Review New Podcast.
There we go. We're not trying to get into the verses.
It's the Review New Podcast. Yeah, this is Irish.
3 minutes we were trying to get that.
It's too hard to say this. But yeah, this is the Review New Podcast. I'm DJ.
I'm Evan.
And this is the podcast where we typically take a second look at your or our favorite movies or albums, you know what I'm saying? And if you want to make your request, head on over to ko-fi.com/rapcritic, where if you are a patron, you get it for all requests half off. But if you're not, you know, you can still get a request too. But, you know, it's better if you're a patron. But I swear last time I did this recording, I did this intro for my Ko-fi and Patreon so much better. But you get what I'm trying to say. Ko-fi for requests and Patreon to see those requests early when I make them, as well as getting half off on the stuff and stuff like that. Yeah, but anyways, let's get into this fucking movie. I'm always chomping at the bit. I'm like, yeah, we got to get all this shit out of the way where I got to say, anyway, let's talk about that movie. All right, so review. That's right. We're getting into The Song of the Sea from 2014 and Tale, and I had to have my good friend, the closest connection to Ireland that I had, to talk about this movie. Maybe he could help enlighten me on some of the mythology and possibly the language and stuff that was happening.
Well, okay, so I am not an expert on Irish mythology by any means. I did take Irish in college 15 years ago, so I'm not fluent at all anymore, although I'm going to brag that in my last oral exam, my professor said I was resunt alifa. I was reasonably fluent, but I'm not anymore.
I know at least Feck off. They somehow snuck the F word into a kid's movie. That's all I know.
No, so Feck is not fuck. It's not the same word. No, and it's also not, like, that's Hiberno English. It's not Irish. But they do speak Irish a little bit, like the Ferryman at one point calls Ben a wacky, which is son, is sunny, because Mac is son. And if you're talking to somebody, you say ah to start, like if store is darling, but if you're calling somebody darling, you say a store. And so you say Mac, except it gets lenited, which is a weird thing that happens to letters. So it's a wacky.
So you're already helping me lenited. I'm already like, wait, what's going on?
So like, yeah. So me remembering weird little grammatical rules from 15 years ago. I don't know how helpful that'll be.
And also, but I just really like, no, it's like, cause with Irish, you know, folklore and just like culture, there seems to be a lot placed on like respect for language, especially in the face of the British trying to erase it and shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it was stamped out. It was the Irish language. When the British were the British were making a concerted effort in Ireland to stamp out the Irish language, to the point that children in school were not allowed to speak Irish. They would get smacked. They were caught speaking Irish, and so they didn't speak it. And you would sometimes have three generations. This is one of my professors told me, you'd have three generations in one house where the grandparents didn't speak any English and the kids didn't speak any Irish. And so the parents would have to go between and translate for them, and the kids and the grandparents wouldn't be able to understand each other directly living together. It's really tragic. And then a lot of like town names got sort of like, you have sort of these names like, you know, Ballybeg is like a generic like name for a small town. It's like saying a little like bumblefuck, but but Ballybag is like, my accent's not great, so I apologize for my pronunciation, but like Ballybag is like literally a town that is small town, but it got kind of just like corrupted into Ballybag, and you'll see a lot of words and place names like that in Ireland because the actual original language. And then of course names all over the place, like a lot, like Irish names are mostly anglicized, and a lot of Irish people now are actually reclaiming the traditional spellings and the traditional pronunciations of their names. And so you'll see, like, and also like women, if you see like Irish women whose name is like Nick something daughter of instead of the, you know, Mac, because that's like the actual original form would be, you know, to have a woman be called like the daughter of Nick, whatever. I'm on a big tangent now because I'm just regurgitating everything I remember.
Well, no, because the very beginning of the movie has like the kid trying to learn some of the Gaelic, you know, while the mom is singing. So it's like already there was that start. That's what reminded me of like, oh yeah, they're like really trying to preserve their language because that's a fucking issue.
Yeah.
And then I was just hearing those Irish melodies, the lilt in them is so ear hypnotizing. You know what I'm saying? Like that first track that I definitely have queued up as the lyric for the end. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's just like as you hear it, the actual song. You know what I'm saying? The way they put the little.
I don't know the Selkie song by heart, but I used to do some trad singing again back in college.
I wrote it down at the end, and I can't. Ear dare hear as. Oh, that hear this heart. Yeah. Na, 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 na. It's so like beautiful.
Wait, I'm looking this up.
Between the, but they say it in the language at one point.
Askelga.
Amrana.
No, Auran Neferaga. Eater on a cedar rust.
Okay, yeah.
Eater huig a cedar house.
Wait. Say that again. Eater toy?
Eater huig is eater house. That's what I'm saying. This is a different alphabet. Irish. No, that's the thing. When people look at Irish words and they're like, why did that spelling doesn't make sense? It's a different alphabet. It's like you wouldn't look at like Arabic or Korean, but except that it looks like the English alphabet, but it's a different alphabet. It only has 18 letters.
It's like if we found some alien species that was like, oh wow, yeah, it looks exactly like yours, but no, you pronounce it very differently.
Well,
it's like
that's what I mean. Well, no, I mean it's not coincidental, you know, obviously, but it's only got 18 letters, and so like DH makes a G sound, MH makes a W sound, or possibly a V sound, depending on some things. I have a whole rant about the word wombat in Irish. Okay, so the word. So, all right. So the word wombat. So obviously wombats are not native to Ireland. There wasn't like a traditional word, but the word wombat got added officially to the Irish language. Now the Irish language does not have a W or a V. The way you make a W or a V sound in Irish is either MH or BH. And the word wombat, spelled in English, W-O-M-B-A-T, got put into Irish as V-O-M-B-A-T, even though the letter V is not in the Irish alphabet. I don't understand why it's not M-H-O-M.
So how would you say it?
Vombat. But I don't know why it's vombat with a V and not with an M-H or a B-H. Anyway, that's annoying. let's
talk about this.
Yeah, we should talk about the movie. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. I was like, wait, which podcast is this?
Yeah, what are we doing? One of the first lines was, I can't remember who says it, but it says like, "For the world is full of weeping, more than you can understand." I think it's the singing. Is it one of the lines in the song? I'm trying to remember.
No, that's the "Come Away, Child."
Is it at the very beginning? Somebody
to the waters. Yeah, that's a poem.
Is it a poem? That's what it is.
That's "The Stolen Child" by W.B. Yeats.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, just that opening line like really prepares you for what the movie's going to be about. But you know, I do certainly have some questions as the plot goes on. But we've talked around it long enough. Let's get into the plot proper. So essentially, what this movie is about this Irish family that like lives on an island, but I feel like they're able to drive off.
There's a ferry.
Yeah.
It's a lighthouse.
So the dad is like seems like a retired sailor, and he you know runs a lighthouse and but has his you know kids there with him, and one is like I think 7, and the other one's like 4 or something like that.
So he's 5 when he's 5 at the start of the movie, and then the little girl's turning 6, so he's about 11.
Okay, so they are way older. Okay. So because what happens at the very start is the kid is there when his mother is giving birth, and sort of going like, oh, hey, look, I'm seeing this, like, she's about to have a child. That's so awesome. I'm about to have a little sister. But then something happens where, like, she has to, like, the kid goes to sleep right as she's, you know, hearing the mother sing to him. And then, like, he wakes up and sees the mother's just about to leave and her hair grows kind of gray or something like mm-hmm. that. Something happens where she has to leave and essentially, like, she goes into the water where, you know, the father goes in after her to try to, like, save her or something to that effect. And then, like, the mother doesn't come out, and but the baby comes out with him. And so it's like, oh, wow, you know, essentially we lost your mom, but we've got the baby. And what it seems like, you know, to an adult watching the movie, it kind of seems like there's a, you know, a child wouldn't get this, but a sort of like adult understanding of like, oh, yeah, what it's like when you lose a mom to childbirth. You know what I'm saying? And the movie kind of seems like it's trying to like set it up in that sort of mystical way of like, oh, it's not that she just died during childbirth, that she had to go back to the sea. And you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it kind of feels like is being set up. But then as the movie plays out, there's a mythical level of it that unfolds that I like on a certain respect. And, as you know, of course, sort of Irish version of Miyazaki sort of way that I've heard people talk about.
It was this movie felt very Miyazaki. Yeah.
But there's a certain level of it that I'm kind of going like, just to not put too fine of a point on it, but is this guy fuck a sea lion? Is that what we're getting to at the end of this movie? Because I'm like, wait.
So I just pulled up the Wikipedia because I knew I had heard this story before, but I wanted to make sure I had it right. But it is a common folktale where a man finds a Selkie's skin and steals it. Because okay, so the Selkies are like mermaids, but they're seals instead of fish, and they have their seal skin that they can wear and take on and off and look like a lady underneath. And so if the story goes that a man will,
but sea lions are faking it and they're actually humans, eh?
No, only Selkies. There are real sea lions.
Oh, okay.
But
so don't actually just have sex with any old
don't
sea.
Don't go
lion.
To the don't go to the zoo. Don't go to the.
No, it's okay. Just worry.
Anyway, but the legend is like a guy finds the seal skin and takes it and therefore forces the Selkie to become his wife and she will have children. But then as soon as she finds her coat, she'll take it back and go back to the sea, even though she loves and misses her children.
Huh. See, now, what I'm used to this story of the sailor being is just a sailor sees is out at sea and he thinks it's a mermaid, but because he hasn't been able to like see well in a long time, it's actually a mermaid. I mean, it's actually a sea lion. Manatee, and he has sex with a manatee. Well, yeah, that's what I'm used to.
That's different. So Selkies are not mermaids. They're, you know, they're similar in a lot of ways, but they're not.
It's totally different.
So that's the story, and it's obviously like Song of the Sea was inspired by that folktale. Although, and she seems to genuinely love her husband, Connor. You know, and I don't know that we're meant to think that Connor's like. The Connor like stole her skin and forced her.
No, but it does lead to a couple of questions when we get to the end of the narrative that it feels like it's supposed to be, well, because it was a mythological thing, you're just supposed to kind of like be fine with it. But there is a certain level of, when we get to it, where I'm like, okay, well, then what is going on? Like,
yeah.
But, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
So, essentially, like, the movie starts off in the, like, as far as the real world is concerned, right? Like, it's a boy who, like, as we are in the movie proper, as it, like, the narrative is set up, the boy's kind of, like, hanging out on the beach, and he's kind of resentful of his little sister, so, you know, he's always playing and doesn't want to play with her, and anytime she tries to play, he's like, you know, get away from me. And there's one specific moment where something happens where he has to save her, and he ends up, like, almost getting drowned or something to that effect, so he gets really angry at her, and he's like, oh, well, I'm gonna, you know, tie you up and put you on our, the little radio flyer thing, and then bring you up to Dad so he can, like, you know, get you in trouble for almost trying to drown me, essentially. But he takes the little sister up to the top of the lighthouse where the dad is kind of, like, staring out into the distance, like, you know, clearly still thinking about his wife. And, you know, the kid's trying to get his attention. And this is the point where I really like about how this movie uses dialogue and misunderstanding and things like that to, like, say things about where the characters are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Oh,
wow. Lightning? Really? It wasn't even raining.
Yeah. I'm going to actually unplug my laptop.
What's going to do with that shit?
I don't know if that's even still a thing.
Yeah,
But I always unplug my laptop if it's a storm.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So this is what happens. So, yeah, he takes the kid up. He takes his little sister up to sort of, like, you know, complain to the dad. But the dad's not really, like, he's clearly, like, lost in thought looking out at the sea. But in a way where he doesn't hear the son kind of talking. So it's like when the kid at first is like, oh, this is what's going on, da-da-da. So the dad just kind of goes, huh, what? And he kind of, like, looks around and he sees the kid, you know, little girl tied up. And he's like, oh, you're playing cops and robbers, were you? You know? So, like, he isn't hearing the kid kind of being angry and talking about something. He's just thinking, oh, you guys are just playing. Oh, it's your birthday. Hey, let's just deal with that right now. Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. So the boy is just kind of like, he's already had this set up feeling of, you know, being resentful towards, you know, his little sister. Then you see in that moment, he feels that his dad is ignoring him. You know, like that's how he feels that things are playing out. But if you're looking from the dad's perspective, who's clearly missing his wife and looking out at sea, like you can see it as sort of like, oh, I didn't even hear what was happening. Oh, I'm just, yeah, yeah, sure. Let's go back to like having fun or whatever, yeah. You know?
A couple things I think it's important to note that the daughter, Saoirse,
yeah.
Looks a lot like the mom and also is non-speaking.
Yeah, yeah,
They mentioned that she's never spoken yet and she's turning 6. And Ben, the boy, looks a lot like Connor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, can we also just take a minute? The artwork this movie is stunning. It is beautiful. So beautiful. It's like
its own style.
Because in some ways, like, it's this really interesting mix of very stylized and almost sort of like symbolic. Like there are parts where the perspective is weird and it almost looks like a stained glass window and it's very sort of simple and geometric, but then there are also these very detailed bits and these different textures. Like
I can tell, like, even though I don't know much about Irish culture, like something very felt about like, oh, this feels like this is an, like, taking from their Irish roots of what, like, their, you know what I'm saying? Their old, you know,
like Irish illuminated manuscripts, like medieval illuminated manuscripts, I think were an influence. And there's I think a really moment that really illustrates this where they go underwater and there are jellyfish that are drawn as just sort of like little squiggles and spirals, but then like a couple of frames later there's a whale that is just this beautiful and very realistic rendering of a whale, and those two things, the very sort of almost symbolic and abstracted renderings of things don't clash with the more realistic parts. It all blends together and it's stunning.
And so they have the birthday party where they're trying to like take the picture and like, oh, this
is, oh yeah, we need to talk about Granny too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I was just about to bring her up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Granny arrives by ferry and the ferryman refers to her as the old witch.
Old witch. And she is like a worrywart who's very kind of like, oh, you know, I'm worried about this and I'm worried about that. So we want everything to
be okay. She's very critical also. Like she immediately shows up and she's like, oh, children shouldn't live here. Yeah. I can't believe you live
that
like this.
That said, I know where the movie ends up going, but, you know, starting off, I'm just like, I don't know, man. Yeah,
well, but on an
island where it's like a kid who's like 5 and, you know, maybe.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, Granny's concerns are not unwarranted. Like, yeah. Granny is not actually wrong about most of the things.
In fact, literally, the next scene is the little girl like, oh, wow, I'm going to play the seashell. And then I see a whole bunch of lights go up around me. And I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, it leads me up to the white coat. And oh, look at this coat. And wow, it leads me down to the you know, sea where a bunch of sea lions are. And wow, why don't I jump in the middle of the night with these sea lions? And I'm as an adult watching this kid, I'm like, oh no.
Right. And it's like, you know, and it's
that's imitatable.
And you know? Yeah, spoiler, the little girl is also a Selkie and she turns in she turns into a seal and she's fine. But yeah, it's like the granny not knowing that and just seeing the little kid almost drowned in the ocean. Like,
yeah, she's just washed up on the shore. That's the first thing that the old woman sees. So she's just like, whoa, what just happened?
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, she's not unreasonable.
Yeah. So wait, so what does feck mean? Because it says feck off on the trailer.
It is a swear. It's just not, hold on.
it says it on the fairy's cave entrance. Yeah, that we find out later. Like at first you're not sure what it is, but then you're like, oh wait, that's what it is.
Middle English and Scots feck by shortening an alteration from Middle English effect.
What? effect off. Is that what they're saying?
Yep. Yeah.
They're saying effect off.
Yeah.
No way. They're saying fuck off.
I mean, that is like, it's used in the same way, but I'm just saying etymologically, it is not the same word as fuck. Because fuck is also from like Old English, but they're two different etymologies.
I see.
Yeah.
But
the more you know.
Yeah. So we're getting into the nuances of language. But yeah, so the dad, oh yeah, he takes the sea lion coat and he throws it into the ocean, right? Because the grandma is sort of going like, oh, you know, I'm getting so tired of this. I'm so worried about the children, da da da. He's basically been pining over his wife, you know. Well, I think I guess we haven't seen the movie up to this point.
I gotta be a nerd again real quick. Because you said sea lion a couple times, but they're seals?
Seal? Yeah,
those are way cuter.
Oh, sorry. I'm missing seal. Three letters.
Hold on.
Wait, what is the difference?
Okay, that ugly fucker is a sea lion. That precious baby angel is a seal.
So just seals or selkies. Is that what we're... don't get it twisted.
And that is also a seal. Oh,
yeah, that is also a seal. That kind of messed up face, but a wonderful voice.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
All right.
That's a seal. That is a precious baby angel. But no ears. Sea lions have weird little floppy ears.
But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So he takes all... He
like, nobody come at me if they love sea lions. I don't actually hate sea lions.
But, you know, the grandmother kind of gives the dad trouble, you know, for being like, oh,
and,
you should
and the grandmother is his mother, to be clear, not the Selkie's mother.
Yeah. And so
she's a human lady.
He decides like, yeah, you know what? I should let this go. I should get over this and like stop just leaving this up in my closet. I'm going to throw this into the ocean, essentially, right?
Yeah. I think he also is concerned about his daughter putting it on and jumping into the ocean.
Yeah. Now,
because he specifically says, I can't lose her, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, a good plot point that we're going to need to bring up later. So now Connor, the little boy, he's like, there's a moment where he gets angry at her again, you know, because, of course, he's like pissed off at her. And he's like, oh, you want to hear a story? Well, I'll tell you a story. And he tells her the story of the giant owl who's like really evil and one day stole the feelings of that giant. Well, it's the giant that he brings up later on that ends up clearly being like the allegory for his dad.
Yeah.
You know? But this is another...
Yeah, there's a very like end of Wizard of Oz thing happening.
Yeah, self-contained, mythology of what's happening as the story unfolds. But again, I like how this movie does it, right? Because it's another one of those things where like it's doing something obvious, but then the way it builds on it with how the boy is talking kind of makes sense in terms of like, oh, I understand why this boy would be saying this. It's not just kind of contrived. It's like he's saying this for a reason, to get at his little sister, to like make her feel bad, right? Because okay, you know, the obvious thing here is like, oh, the representation here is happening is that the boy tells the girl the story of like this owl stole the feelings of this giant and turned it to stone, and maybe
MacLear is the giant.
Yeah.
Who was voiced
MacLear and Maka the Owl Witch. That's who it was. Yeah,
he was voiced by Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah, so Maka the Owl Witch will come and she did this to MacLear the giant. And so, ooh, maybe he'll do this to our dad one day. And then he won't have any feelings anymore. So he won't love you.
Hold on. I just, I pulled up the TV tropes because they had a list of characters. And I didn't realize this, but there is actually a fully Irish language version of this movie. We obviously watched the English one, but
yeah,
it was, yes,
getting to the point, like, I like that they kind of brought this up, right? Like, you know, oh, it just might come take dad, because it's playing into that, like, the subtext of, you know, as you're watching the movie, it's the actual representation of the dad, clearly, right? But it's repurposed in this story. Like, he makes the connection in order to frighten his little sister, right? To be like, oh, and maybe he'll, the Maka will take our dad's feelings, so then he won't love you anymore, haha. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's made obvious, but just for the purpose of him to just make her feel sad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So one afternoon, I think it's, Halloween, right? Because, it's the time when the souls are, you know, the line between the real world and the soul's world is the most thin or something like that, right? So the boy, they don't make it clear. Are they going, like, were they coming back from school? Or I think the boy was just running away. I think that's what was happening. The boy was just, like, running away. And then the girl kind of, like, shows up behind him to be like, I want to come with you, you know, sort of like indicating that. But I remember when I was watching the scene, I was like, wait, are they not going to school at any point? Because it just seems like it starts on the Halloween day thing, because you see the old lady putting out some trash.
Yeah, that never occurred to me. Yeah, I never thought about that. I mean, I guess theoretically it could all take place over a weekend.
Sure.
But yeah, they don't seem to be enrolled in school. That doesn't seem to be a thing.
Because the old lady, the first time we see other kids is when the old lady's about to take out some trash.
Right, and there's trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, and she's putting out a coat. And then, like, there's trick-or-treaters in the trash can. And she's like, oh, get out of here.
But they're not trick-or-treaters.
They are the three fairies. But what's interesting is, like, watching the movie at first, I was like, yeah, why are these kids hiding in the trash can? What's going on? But they're hiding there because they wanted to get the coat. And so they run off with the coat. They're like, oh, we got the coat. We got the coat for the Selkie. But they don't realize that's just, you know, just some coat, right? The girl is annoying her bigger brother, and I love the way this boy sounds so authentically Irish. What do you think you're doing? It's like, you know, we see so many movies, like Five Goes West or whatever, where, like, the kid does not speak in the same way that the parents do. You know, like, in Five, why does the little mouse not have a Jewish accent? Why do the parents have Jewish accents, but not the child? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that was... I think, like, a lot of this is... A lot of this is because Five-O Goes West, like, was made in America.
Oh, sure. No, no, no. But right, I'm just saying, like...
Actually, the kid was actually Irish.
But I just think that's so interesting. I was like, I feel like I've grown up with that as a kid of, like...
So you expect all children to have American accents?
Kids don't have accents, yeah.
All kids have American accents. It's
just so, they grow into their whatever accent it is. They start off with normal voices, you know. So basically, the brother, he's running away to... go back to Koo. Yeah, the dog.
Yeah, Koo, which is so cute.
Yeah, also, the big Koo, fluffy dog.
Koo is just Irish for dog or hound. Yeah. So it's like, he's just named dog.
Yeah, so he's their dog that lives on the lighthouse that the boy is running back to because, like, oh, you know, I don't want to leave Koo. And the little girl's like, well, I want to come too, but, you know.
And again, Granny is not wrong that Koo would not be happy living in her tiny little townhouse.
Right. So, but the thing is, Koo runs away from, I think, their house to find them anyway. So, like, because halfway through their journey, they come across Koo and they're like, Koo!
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, you'll come with me, but I'm going to tie a thread around you. So if you give me trouble, I can pull the thread and you're...
Yeah, he has some sort of extendable cord on his belt.
Yeah.
Which I think it's for the dog, but he clips her to it also.
Yeah. And she's holding the horn because she starts playing it. The seashell.
The seashell.
Yeah. Because she starts playing it. And he's like, oh, that's mine. You know, that's not yours. Give it back. And right before she gives it back, she like sneezes on it. And he's like, ew, you're disgusting. It's like, fine, you could keep it for now. But after we clean it, it's mine, you know. So he's just like, she's just playing it a little bit, you know, like while they're walking. Then, of course, the fairies come up because they can hear the playing. And they're like, oh, it's the girl. It's the Selkie. We found her. And like, oh, yeah. We found your coat too. Let's go.
I also want to mention one other thing about Saoirse is she's like asthmatic, like she's constantly like kind of wheezing. Also, like, that just stressed me out so much. Like, child with respiratory problems.
Yeah. So they take, you know, the younger sister and, like, are pulling her along. Like, now that we've got you, we've got to go before Maka spots us, basically. You know, they got to abscond with her immediately.
Wait. You're talking about the Dinashi, the fairies?
Yeah.
Okay.
They say, we've got to go away with you before Maka the owl sees you. And so they, like, immediately run with her to the... that little the fairy hole that's in the roundabout in the middle of the street.
Like, yeah, that's like a fun. Yeah, it's like the middle of a traffic circle.
Yeah,
and they just have a little fairy hole in there with this kind of like, it looks like just a concrete tunnel with a lot of graffiti in it, but it's like very beautiful graffiti. And then in the middle they have their little fairy mound. Yeah,
and then they hit that hit song. Look, I fucking love it. Then they start with do the Molly Well again. Do the Molly Well. Do the Molly Well. Do the Molly Well. Do the Molly Well again. Like, it is so good. It's so fucking good.
Like, it is very catchy.
And, like, they start playing it because they're really happy. Like, oh, we found her. Let's play a song. And they're like, oh, let's play this song.
And the little one has a bow on. And then the tall, skinny one that looks like Shakespeare has a fiddle, I think. I'm trying to remember. But yeah.
Yeah. And so while they're doing the dance, they're like, oh, we've got it. This is your coat. And we're going to be able to, you know, sing and bring all the magic back. But then they go like, oh, wait, she does, you know, the little brother, he's kind of like watching off to the side because he sees this happening. But then he goes like, wait, she doesn't sing. Like, oh, she doesn't sing at all. What are you talking about? That's not even her coat. That's not the real coat. And they're like, oh, no, like, we're never going to be able to.
Oh, yeah, because she's just wearing the grandmother's coat, yeah. not the Selkie coat.
Right. So all the singing, though, attracts the Maka, the owl, and her owls. So they're like, they bust in at like the last second. And they're like,
oh, wait, sorry. I keep pulling back because I'm remembering details. Like, the reason that the coat was getting thrown out in the first place is that the granny finds Saoirse in the bathtub wearing her fur coat, which it just seems weird. But then you think about it for a second. It's like, oh, she's trying to turn into a seal again because she knows you put on the fur coat and get wet and then you turn into a seal.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. So, like, essentially the Maka the owl like breaks in and starts turning the three fairies into stone, essentially.
I don't think it's her. It's not Maka herself. It's just her owls.
Oh,
because we don't really see her until the very end. We don't see Maka until.
Oh,
the end.
Okay.
Her hench
it
owls.
It is her just owls. Yeah.
Her hench
but they,
owls
they're able
in.
To turn them into stone, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah. And so it's like, but then her like the little girl playing the flute like scares them off somehow, but and like allows their heads to come back a little bit. So they're like, oh, you've unfrozen us a little bit, but you've got to, you know, what do they have to? You have to find the coat and, you know, do all the
right. They
go
say
on
she,
the adventure.
Well, they say she needs to get her Selkie coat so that she can sing the Selkie song and send the fairies back to fairyland.
Sing the Selkie song. It's so poetic. But yeah, and I love this bit, right? So while they're escaping out of the little tunnel, the stuck fairies have this little bit where they're like, you know, you've got to save us, lad. You've got to, you know, go and do what you got to do to get us out of here. And then a couple seconds go by, and as they're like crawling out of the tunnel, you hear in the background, you hear, I'd like to sing some more. And the other one goes, oh, go on, man. And you hear him go, do the Wally Mulligan, do the Wally. I was like, that's right. Like, classic Irishman to the end. Look, you can't resist that melody. Like, he's not wrong. Yeah. That's a fucking bop right there. But yeah, so the kids try to get on a bus and they, you know, try to tell an adult. You know, it's always this part of the movie where they're like, oh my God, we saw a fairy. I swear to God, we just saw some fairies. But of course, because it's Halloween, you know, the guy's like really, you know, disbelieving. It's like, yeah, there's tons of ghouls and goblins on Halloween, you know.
Oh yeah, the bus truck, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a great shot, too, of like all the little kids in their costumes on the bus.
So they get off the bus and they come across their dog Koo. And, it stops them, like, the girl kind of stops him at this awkward place. I think she opens the emergency, like, thing in the back. So he's like, what's going on? Like, you can't do that. This isn't an official stop, you know, but I'm letting you guys off because you're freaking crazy, you know. So they get off the bus. They somehow come across Koo. But I think it's after she starts playing the shell so that they can see sort of, like, where the trail goes to. And, but then as they're traveling, the girl starts getting sick. She starts growing like some gray hairs. And so they're like, oh crap, we really got to go then. You know what I'm saying? Then they come across where they believe where Maka, the owl lady, kind of lives. Cause they can kind of, isn't it? Cause I think it kind of looks like her place.
Are you talking about the Holy Well?
Right? Yeah.
No, I don't think, no. That's they find the Holy Well.
Oh wait, because her home is where all those talking stone heads are, right?
They find it's a Holy Well. It's like a little shrine with a well, and then the house around it with the little icons and candles.
But in order
and
to get into it, they need to go past those nettle leaves, right?
They have to go through some stinging nettles, and Ben carries Saoirse, and he starts being slightly better big brother.
Because he's like, oh, I'm helping you out. And there's a little part where you see the girl kind of scream too, because she's getting stung a bit, and that almost made me go like, it's like for half a second she's like,
we should mention it's established kind of early on in that first scene on the beach that Ben is afraid of going in the water.
Which
is really sucks for a kid living in a lighthouse.
Right? Like,
but he, again, he does not want to get in water. So that is established already.
Yeah. So, but this is kind of a tender moment because, like, the brother went out of his way to, like, you know, hold her above him so she wouldn't get stung as much. And then the sister kind of walks out and gets some duck leaves that kind of, like, soothe his legs. So it's kind of like, oh, you know, we helped each other out. Then they come across the... Well, wait a minute. I think at this point, don't the owls steal the little girl? I think the owls steal the girl.
The owls pick her up. Like, she falls down the well, and then Ben gets pulled in after her because the dog jumps in.
Yeah, but then, into that well. Yes.
But the owls steal her and take her away.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ben is now on his own.
Yeah, and because Connor, the little boy, he comes across. Ben is the boy who comes across the. Yeah, you're looking at the picture. Who is that guy?
That's the great Shanachi.
Yeah, yeah. Who's clearly, you know, represented by what looks like the
Doc Man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Earlier in the movie. And he's like this very forgetful guy. I can't possibly relate.
He lives in a cave lined with his own hair. He's got so much hair, and there's just balls of his hair.
But none of the hair is like broken. Apparently, they're all just long hairs because they're all threads of stories. Yeah. Because there's one point where he's like, "Oh no, don't mess up the hairs because you know you might break a strand." And I'm like, "Damn, that's a you know pretty finicky way to keep these stories." But you know. And he's like constantly forgetful except for when he like is looking at the stories, so it's kind of like this, oh, I'm like just going about my day, and then it's like, huh, what, who's there? Oh yes, well this is specifically what's happening here. But anyway, like he's able to hyperfixate but then immediately lose it. It's almost like some sort of ADHD
or dementia,
yeah, or something like that. But yeah, he comes across him essentially telling him, you know, to follow the thread to get to her, essentially. Yeah. Isn't that what happens? Yeah.
The great Shanachi gives Ben one of his hairs to follow to get to Macha.
And he tells him, like, oh, don't lose, like, whatever you do, don't lose all hope, because she's lost all hope, and she'll make you lose all hope, too. It's like, ooh, that's the true fear. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then there's a bit where, you know, they're going through the sort of, it's really cool visual moment where he's going through that tree that is clearly like the representation of, you know, rebirth. It looks kind of like a birth canal as he's going up there. You know what I'm saying? But then he kind of has a flashback at the moment where he's seeing, remembering the moments of when Shirsha was born and how he was like, you know, basically coming to that moment of like resenting her because he had lost her, essentially, his mom. Because
that happens before he gets to Macha's house.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
And then she just is like, oh, you're... we'll get to that.
Well, I think we're, like, right before it, right?
Right before, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember... This is the note where I put, he hops on those rocks that are alive, but they're not, like, a threat or anything. They're actually, like, being really nice. They're like, mind your head, boy. You know, like, yeah. Watch where you go.
Yeah.
So it's, like, one of those, like, wait, is this, like, a... Oh, everything is alive, you know? That sort of thing. Yeah. But it's just such a... It's so interesting that this is set up as the villain's lair, but it's all of these rocks that are just being, like, oh, mind your head, boy.
Well, the rocks, I think, are her victims. They're people she turned to stone.
So yeah, but it's like... not, like, a, turn back, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's so interesting how it's, like...
It's a bit
more mundane than you're expecting, you know?
Yeah.
So he gets in there, and we get to, you know, here's the witch herself, you know, and you think she'd be, you know, acting all evil, you know, juggling skeleton heads or something, like, you know what I mean? But she's actually like really calmed and relaxed, you know. And in fact, you know, at first the boy's like, Ben, he's like, oh, I thought, you know, you'd be all evil. And she's like, oh, those stories always paint me as the bad guy. No, I just want to help people by pulling out the nasty parts that, you know, people don't want and throwing it away. People don't want anything to do with that stuff, you know. And this is where we get to the part where she's like, well, wait, aren't they also taking away the fairy magic too? So it's like, you know, that seems to be a byproduct. She's not caring about that. And, you know,
I mean, I think that's the thing, is the witch.
It's a package deal, you know?
Well, and the witch is very obviously, you know, modeled on Granny. She looks like Granny.
And it's a metaphor, you know.
And her, and we find out that she turned, you know, Maclear, that Maclear was her son, and she turned him into stone to protect him from his heartbreak.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, the idea of, and I mean, this is, you know, this movie was from 10 years ago, and the idea of the, you know, sympathetic villain who you can understand where they're coming from. I mean, it's almost a cliche at this point, but, but it is interesting here that she's not, you know, an evil cackly, mwahaha, I want to eat their souls for my own power, which right. she is, you know, she misguidedly thinks that protecting people from unpleasant feelings is the best way to help them. And I guess that's sort of what we're meant to think of with Granny as well.
Yeah, it's like the overcorrecting. Yeah.
Again, I feel like Granny has a good point when she's like, hey, your right. wife died 6 years ago and maybe you should pull yourself out of it and stop neglecting your children. Right. Like, that's not like... saying don't have feelings. That's saying, like, you need to, like... pull yourself together and take care of your children.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like, I don't know. Like, I feel like we're kind of going a little hard on the Granny.
Yeah.
I feel like Connor needs to be a fucking man. No, but I understand a lot. I mean, I don't know. When you had a child with a mythical creature, I guess that's a different kind of love.
Yeah.
We got to ask some questions about that, too. Why are we just accepting that as a given? This guy just fucked a magical creature. That's just okay. But whatever. All right, we'll get to that. So, but you know, it's for the sake of the, oh, magical tale. But yeah, I like how she believably in the dialogue goes from the caring mother to that intimidating figure where you can feel the motherly inclination slipping into the justification for her being like, no, and I'm going to suck your feelings out too so that you won't have to feel bad anymore, you know?
Right. And we see that, and we also see, oh, and the fairies, have told Ben to be wary of the jars, and the jars are how she sucks the feelings out.
Yeah.
And then he gets up into the attic, which is full of feelings jars, and Saoirse, who is halfway turned to stone.
And you can see that, Maka is halfway turned to stone as well.
Yeah,
she needs the owls to help her up. And so when she's chasing him up the stairs, she's kind of having a hard time because she has to, like, hop up everything. So it's kind of like that bit of, you know, that bit of tenseness happening. And then she's like banging on the door to try to get out. And she's like looking through a hole and stuff like that. But like Koo kind of sits on the door and I think farts at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he kind of farts through the hole in her eye.
Koo like, to the rescue.
I will say this part really reminded me of the witch in Spirited Away, especially when her head's like, when her head's blowing up and.
He, you know, the little girl is, like, half turned into stone, and he's kind of, like, has to have that moment of, like, oh, no, how do I get you out of this? And it's a great emotional moment where he's, like, I'm sorry for being resentful towards you, you know, I love you, and, you know, that sort of, like, being a good big brother moment. And then she's, like, okay, I'll sing the, you know, play the music, essentially. And so she starts playing the music, and it starts, like, causing all of the jars to kind of shake and like break open, and eventually like all of the jars with the basically weather representing the emotions, they kind of like go over to Maka the owl and kind of like get sucked into her mouth, so she's kind of like absorbing all the emotions at the same time and just kind of like, you know, laughing and crying and, you know, being scared and all that sort of stuff. And then she like really pumps up and then just like deflates and falls all the way down. And so it's kind of like, oh, you know, she's finally, I mean, I guess she was forced to accept her, all of the emotions, which I guess also would have included happiness because she laughs too. It's like, right, wait, what's going on there? Like,
I mean, it's basically.
Don't be too heavy.
Well, I guess like because her, you know, her goal is to stay calm, and even like joy is like, you know, getting overexcited, you know.
Earlier in the movie there's a scene where she's like, oh, I need my medicine, and I feel like the medicine is kind of looked in the same like size as the jars, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, because I mean, it's like, what, like, if you're on like generally on psychiatric medication. Typically, it's something you would just take on a regular basis. And the as-needed medications are things like Xanax, which are, you know, very often abused. Or, I mean, also, this seems to be based on, like, Ben's Walkman. This seems like it might be, like, late 80s, early 90s. So, also, the drug landscape was different at that point.
But, you know, yeah. I just felt like they were trying to do that emotional... I mean, you know what I'm saying? What do you call it? The sort of film language calling of like, oh, the way we bottle up our emotions, you know, that sort of thing. That's what I was thinking. So we get to the point where...
I'm just saying, if Granny wants to pop a Xanax after she had to rescue her granddaughter that, as she can tell, almost drowned, go for it. Judgment.
Let's make that clear. Yeah, what we're saying is the message of for our side of things, for our podcast. But that said, this is what I wrote. Like, so we get to the point where the, they're playing the music and it causes the so beautiful. And it causes the mom to like come back eventually because all the music and the magic is being restored. And you see all of the, you know, the three fairy musicians, they're kind of like, you see their
right. Like all the bestonified creatures all get unstoned.
That's right.
And the giant even wakes up and there's, oh yeah. And after Maka gets her emotions back, she is like, oh shit, you gotta rescue, you gotta get her back and get her seal coat on.
That's right, yeah,
and so sends them back riding Koo.
Yeah.
That's a strong dog.
Yeah, but he's aided by the wind dogs.
With two magic wind dogs who turn out to belong to MacLear, and so they go off with MacLear at the end. And then mom comes back, yeah, Bruno.
And then the mom comes back, and it's kind of like she's like just descend. No. I think one of the seals comes up and it's like a white seal on the little cape there. And then it puffs up and then it's, ooh, it's actually the mom. But her eyes are closed. And it's like, she's kind of like calling the daughter to her. And so the daughter comes to her and it's like, it seems like they're slowly turning and walking away. And they're like, wait, you know, don't go. You know, I can't lose you again. You know, we can't lose her at least. You know, and there's like, oh, does she want to stay? Well, I guess she wants to stay. So she gets to stay. And I'm like, wait, can we stop for a second and just...
Wait. Oh, we need to back up and even mention, like, I don't remember if you said, because Saoirse was playing the shell, but she also starts singing.
And this is
the first time we've heard words come out of her mouth.
That's
a really significant thing, that she hasn't spoken at all until that point, and then she starts singing, kind of perfectly, like she has no issue forming words at all. But
this is my thing. It's like, I feel like the mom, like, if this is how things are supposed to be with Selkies or whatever the hell that they need to descend and ascend to the heavens or something like that, if you don't play a siren, maybe she could have talked to him about that or something. Could have given some instructions, you know, hey, I'm a sea siren. You know, I go away when the thing isn't called at a certain time or something like that. Like, it just feels like, wait, the resolution of this was to play this thing. And, like, if that thing had been played, none of this would have happened. But wait, we have to go? Like, why do we have to go?
Some of that was unclear to me as well. Because, again, in the original folktales... The original folktales are about a man who tricks and kidnaps a woman and basically forces her to live with him.
That's already not great starting place for a kid.
Right. So the Selkie like has children and she loves her children, but she's still essentially a victim, you know, and she's been abducted. And so of course she's going to escape. And even though she misses her kids, she's got to go home and escape.
We could smooth that storyline out a little bit.
But this is what I'm saying is like in the original story, it's a lot clearer because, okay, the man did a bad thing and held this creature captive and she didn't want to be there. And so she had to go, even though she misses her kids. But in this story, she seems to be there willingly and seems to love Connor and love her kids. And so it's not clear why she went away or why she would have stayed and had kids in the first place if she was going to go away. It just becomes a lot less clear if she's there willingly, which she does seem to be.
Yeah, and earlier in the movie where she's like, oh no, I have to go into the sea. It's like, okay, well, can you only give birth in the sea? And then after that, can you come back? Like, what's... Because it's like, I'm thinking she's dead, but she's not dead. She was just in the sea. Was she dead or was she in the sea? Because it seemed like they kind of like trying to do both.
Yeah, I think she wasn't dead. She was possibly in Ferry.
Because of the thing hadn't been the shell hadn't been played, so it was kind of like causing all of the life to be all the magic to be going from the realm, which is why the three fairies were needing help in the first place, right? But it just feels kind of like for the sake of them having a story that unfolds the way it does, it feels like they don't think about, certain elements that are like, I'm thinking, like, is this Phoenix rules? Because if it's Phoenix rules, why didn't you just tell me when you first met me, like, hey, babe, eventually I'm going to burst into a flame, but I'll come back. Just tell me so I'm not just sitting here looking off at the dock for 6 years like, where the hell did you go?
Yeah, maybe we're both missing something, but I do think... it's like the emotional through line and the character growth of like Ben, also obviously we keep dropping details and then I go like, oh, wait. But like Ben, has to overcome his fear of water and jump into the ocean to save Saoirse, right? So like the emotional arc of Ben learning to like stop resenting Saoirse and to overcome his fear and his resentment and Granny like learning to accept feelings and Connor learning to like focus on his kids and stop living in the past. Like all of the
Accept loss. Right. But like, if she's not dead, then
this is what I'm saying. Like the emotional through line of the story makes a lot of sense, but the logistical plot is a little confusing because I think it's not so much that she's dead, but I don't think she's just like a seal swimming around the lighthouse all the time. Like, I think she has been in Ferry and then she comes back from Ferry because it's Halloween and she can, but like, but it's still, there's definitely parts that are confusing about like why certain things happen.
Yeah. But I get what you're saying. Like, because it's Halloween. Yeah. That was the thing that they had built up of like, oh, she's able to cross over the realms for this moment. And but it still just kind of feels like, what about last year?
I was definitely confused about that as well. I have like a whole big thing I want to get into, but I want to take a break first. But if there's more plot you wanted to talk about first, let's do
that. Well, no, I think that's essentially it. Because I was like, okay, the mom is about to take the daughter away. It seems to the afterlife or this special spiritual realm. But then they're like, oh, we want her to stay, so she just can. But it was like, wait, I thought without the coat, she was getting sick though, right? So is she going to be okay without the coat? Because the whole thing was like, oh, no, I'm getting sick and I need the coat. And then she gets the coat and then it's like, oh, I'm not okay.
Yeah, I think the idea was she was getting sick because this thing needed to happen and hadn't happened yet. And now it's happened, so she's fine.
Yeah.
I feel like that there could have been a little bit more clarity around.
Yeah. Also, he totally fucked a seal.
The fantasy rules.
But yeah, I understand you want to do it.
She wasn't a seal. She just came out of a seal.
Oh, sure. He totally didn't think she was a seal when he was fucking her. All right, got it.
He stole her seal skin so that...
It's fine. Anyway. Yeah, it's totally fine if he stole her...
All right.
No, but yeah, let's do the cut real quick.
We're going to take a break. Okay.
All right. So after sailor totally fucked a seal. All right. So now that we've established that, what was your big point that you wanted to bring this to?
Okay. So I didn't really, I don't know. Sometimes I miss things. And so I'm glad to know like that you also were slightly confused by the actual plot. But all that said, so I have very ambivalent feelings about this movie. Mostly positive because on the one hand, like it's, gorgeous artwork.
It's really a great movie to just watch. Like, yeah. I could just watch this again.
Beautiful artwork. Awesome music, of course. Awesome music. Really good voice acting. Really good, again, the emotional journeys. Even if like the plot's a little confusing, the emotional arcs of the characters are really solid. And it's just generally really, really delightful. And I really loved watching it. That said, the one thing that's like tugging me in the other direction is, so Saoirse is half Selkie. She's not a changeling. She's not a fairy who's been left in the place of a stolen child, which is what the changeling story is. But she's still, because she's half Selkie, she's associated with fairy, with the realm of fairy. She's magical. She doesn't talk, and she's a little strange. And so there are echoes of the changeling story. And the reason, so this is just me bringing like a lot of outside baggage to it, but the story of the changeling or of the fairy child is, if you look at the folklore, it's this kid. I had this perfectly normal kid who, and until they were 2-3 years old, they were perfectly normal and lovely. And then all of a sudden, they changed and they wouldn't talk and they wouldn't make eye contact and they started being weird and counting things and organizing things and acting old and rocking back and forth. And that's not my child. That's a different child that was left by the fairies. Well, that could very often be a parent's experience of autism. In fact, one of the reasons that like the vaccines causing autism conspiracy theory has taken off so much is people say, well, my child changed right after they got vaccines, because very often autistic traits start to show up around the same age that kids get a lot of vaccines. So the story,
and they also started talking to girls, and I just want to make it stop.
Well,
but, maybe we have to have complicated talks with them about their sexuality.
Well, I think that's a separate thing. But so when you've got you have all these stories that are essentially reflecting what is often a parent's experience of autism, is like, oh, this was my kid, and then all of a sudden they became very different and they became very strange. And so there was this idea that the kid was actually a fairy. And there were all these rituals and stories that if you did certain things, it would force the changeling to leave and you would get your real baby back. And very often, sometimes these things were like, oh, you boil water in an eggshell in front of it and it will, you know, start laughing and say, I'm 3,000 years old and I've never seen anybody do that before. And then it will be forced to give the real baby back. But some of these rituals were essentially physical torture. They were, you know, hold it on a shovel over hot coals and things like that. And kids were tortured, and in fact, there were people being killed. There's a book called The Burning of Bridget Cleary about a case that actually was quite late. It was in the 19th century, of a woman whose husband decided that she was a changeling who got burned to death. And so this strange non-speaking child is actually a magical creature and is part fairy. And is fine if you throw her in the water because she's a fairy, because she's a Selkie. And I mean, look, I can already hear people going like, it's not that deep. You're reading way too into it. None of that's in the movie. And it's not. No, like it's not in the movie. And I'm not saying like, oh, this movie is bad for engaging with these legends because, you know, yada, yada, because there's this baggage. I certainly don't think the movie is bad, or that like people shouldn't engage with these lessons or shouldn't talk about these myths, because, you know, I mean, that's a whole culture there. I'm not saying like, oh, they all need to be abandoned or whatever. I'm saying that my own personal reaction to the movie was I enjoyed it a great deal. And also in the back of my mind was, in real life, Saoirse would probably be autistic or have some other disability, right? Like just not being non-speaking, like, is in and of itself a disability. And the framing of, I don't know, and maybe this is just me like overthinking or whatever, but I often have trouble with a lot of fantasy tropes, not just this one, like a lot of different fantasy tropes, when I think in real life, this person would actually have such and such going on. This child would be disabled, or this person would be experiencing psychosis, or, you know, or this would actually be like an environmental problem or whatever, or this would be a grifter. Like I very often have trouble with fantasy stories because the problem with fantasy,
they're taking the calling to a real life event clearly, but then kind of taking a irresponsible approach to how you'd ultimately resolve that.
Well, yeah, I guess,
what that allegory
would be. Guess, because like, okay, think about, you know, the movie, we've all seen this happen in a movie or a TV show where, like, we all know that, like, a horde of vampires is about to descend on, you know, on the prom or whatever, and somebody runs in going, the vampires are coming, the vampires are coming, everybody needs to get out now. And, like, you know in the movie that that person's right and you're supposed to listen to them,
yeah,
but nobody listens to them. But it's like, okay, but in real life, that person would be either fucking around or having a severe mental health crisis.
Right.
And so it's like, it's very hard for me in stories where the way we're rooting for people to behave or handle something or what we're supposed to, or what they're supposed to believe is completely opposite to what we would want people to believe or do in real life.
Right.
And I think all of that is actually what brings me back around, though, is in this particular movie, we know that Connor knows that his daughter is magical and all that because he fucked a seal.
Yeah. So it's cool.
It's cool.
And you know, again, I feel like, you know, they just could have just been better about prepare. That's what this movie is really about. It's about how parents don't actually help prepare their children for the world that they need to face. Because I feel like this whole time, you know, you could have at least done something about the, I don't know, I mean, maybe she could have given him some, like, instructions right before she was like, oh yeah, BT dubs, after we fucked and 9 months after we're right about to have this child, oh yeah, if I have a healthy child, I kind of have to go back into the ocean and da-da-da-da.
Oh, yeah, maybe, like, that, you know, maybe that was it, because Ben is not a Selkie, so maybe, yeah, it's like if the baby comes out human. I don't know if it's a gender thing, because there are male Selkies. the legends have male Selkies, but maybe in this particular movie universe, only, like, if it's a girl, or maybe it's just if it's a Selkie and she can just tell. Yeah, like, that she was just hoping for another human baby, and
yeah, look,
that's,
I'm just
why
saying,
she thought it was going to be fine.
Like, the Selkies that are in the ocean, you know, when they have babies, they don't, you know, abandon them and go live on land somewhere. They take care of them. So what the hell is the deal with this? Like, you know, it just felt like, okay, what's going on? For real, though. Like, oh no, I have, like, at the beginning, I really want an answer for that. When she has to go into the ocean because she's turning gray, it's like, okay, is it because the conch wasn't played, but that can't have anything to do with his emotions, because his emotions were fine at that point. It's not like his emotions were taken away and then that caused anything to happen. And like, you know what I'm saying? There was nothing set up to that point other than, oh no, a human and a Selkie having a child together. You could assume that maybe is bad, but...
Yeah, apparently, you know, in the, like, in the folklore, like, the kids just tend to have webbed fingers, which is actually fairly common. Like, people get born with webbed fingers and toes, especially in places with smaller and less genetically diverse populations. That's just a common thing that pops up. It's a recessive trait that, you know, people have webbed fingers. So.
Yeah. Well, no, ended on that. No. Because I, you know, and I feel bad because, like, this is an enjoyable film to watch.
I knew a guy when I was a kid. I knew he was another kid who had just two of his toes were webbed. He had one web. That was it. Just between two toes. He didn't have any other webs. Just, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to...
I'm sorry. What were you saying? Before I interrupted you about a single webbed toe.
I can't remember. I just remember... Oh, yeah. Now I remember. It's like, this movie is an enjoyable film. And, like, I could watch it, like, with my family or whatever. But it is, like, one of those things where it's like, as soon as I think about, wait, why is this happening? Because she had to go into the ocean for a... I guess they hadn't done this before.
Maybe they explain it in the Irish version.
Yeah, maybe. But it just feels like there's one or two things that's missing that's making this a complete narrative that isn't, like, you know, running into itself in terms of why it's happening. You know what I mean? Well, it's happening because in the future she needs to play the thing, but that's not what's happening
it,
right
you
now.
You know what it reminds me of? It kind of has, like, a dream logic to it.
Yeah,
it almost feels
like
a dream where, like, yeah, there's plot holes, but, like, just go with it.
You know what? It feels like to me that it's like this was the life that Ben and Shersha are living, like, up to this point. They think that they are just, like, normal kids, but they are actually within this mythological realm. Like, that's the thing that it feels like is in the wider world happening. Like, they don't realize how, like, the mythological world, that's actually true. And so when, you know, Ben is telling stories to the little sister, it's like he's just taking these as just stories, but actually, like, he doesn't know how much truth there is to it. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, it feels like, you know, the emotional story that they're trying to tell is like, oh, there's mythological truth to it, but what that mythological truth is really pulling at is the sadness, you know, underneath it, you know, of losing someone that you love in the second and third, you know. It just kind of felt like it was running up against that when you kind of have the reality of, yeah, that's what it is. This movie feels like it's supposed to be about sorrow and loss, but then when the character shows up at the end where it's like, oh, you're not dead, you're just here, then it's like, well, what is happening? Like, okay, but she's got to go back, sure, but like, but can I see you next year? Or like, you know what I'm saying? She's not like dead, clearly. We can see her, she can come back, and the kid has the option to go or not, and it's like, oh, well, could she have been a thing where she comes back next year? Like, maybe she wants to see her people, like, for a while? No, you know what I mean? It just feels like we didn't, like, think about how that structured. We just needed to have the ending where it's like, oh, no, is the girl gonna go? Oh, well, we have to have a thing where she doesn't. And it's like, well, Mom, can you stay, too? Like, that's the thing. I'm like, Mom, can you stay? Because if she can stay, why can't you stay?
Well, and they did. I think she says the daughter can choose because she's half human. Like, the daughter is not the Selkie in the same way that the mother is. She's half Selkie and half person. So, yeah, I think the mom doesn't really have the option to stay.
I'm just saying, can we set up visitation? But so I guess, well, fine. I guess screw it. The mom is like, dang, you get to take care of the kids, and I get to go off, you know, fuck off and live under, you know what I'm saying? Live in the spiritual sea, you know, yeah, pounding tail all day, oh, not having any kids to be. I'm just saying, like, are you serious? She's got visitation once a year? You know, she doesn't have to take care of these kids? It's bullshit.
Or, I mean, every 6 years, it seems like that. I don't know.
But yeah, so. Sorry for being a little harsh to this, you know, at this point, probably a kid's family classic film. But, you know, we're just having a little good time.
But all that said, so, you know, but plot quibbles aside, it's really an enjoyable watch, and the artwork and the music are absolutely stunning. And I think for no other reason, it's worth just don't think about it too hard. Just watch.
I do like it in terms of like, Irish culture getting to have like something turned into like a classic film like this, you know. I feel like cultures around the world don't get that unless they're a Disney movie. And then you can get the very, very curated version of what they think your culture should be. You know what I'm saying? So I did enjoy that as much, you know, getting raw culture from, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least that's what this felt like. Like, this felt like a genuine Irish movie trying to tell a story, you know?
Yeah, because it was made in Ireland, and I'm trying to see what
by a group called Cartoon Saloon. People were
I didn't realize The Secret of Kells was earlier. For some reason, I thought The Secret of Kells was later. But yeah, if we haven't mentioned it so far, but this was by the same director as did The Secret of Kells.
Yeah, and this is the second installment of his Irish folklore trilogy. Ooh, there's gonna be a
there's
third
another one,
one
called. It came out in 2020. There's one called Wolfwalkers. That looks cool.
If someone wants to request that, send it right through. You know what to do. And if you want that priority queuing, you know what I'm saying? That's also available. So hit us up, Ko-fi.com/Rapcrew, to get with it, act like you want it if you want to make those requests, as well as getting the episodes early when you go on over to patreon.com/rapcritic. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get good at my wrap up here. But if there's nothing else that you want to say, is there anything else you wanted to bring up? You're looking inquisitively at the Wikipedia.
No. Just did we miss anything? And no.
I think we got the broad strokes. I do like to do that. I do try to be like, if there's something really obvious that we're missing, like, sure, I definitely don't want to forget about it. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. I feel like
it just says the plot. Justice, you know? But Brana disappears after giving birth to their daughter at sea.
Wikipedia, they're sometimes not helpful.
I mean, I think it is helpful in that.
Yeah, sometimes they're helpful. Other times they'll be like, that's not exactly how that happened. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, this has been the Review A New Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Like I said, you know what to do if you want to get those requests in, and you know what to do when you want to hear them early. So until next time, I'm DJ.
Misha Evan.
And... Hear the heart. Pull up the lyrics. Pull up the. Oh my. Hey there. Who